The only person I know who can give us a sensible answer on whether or not this is a good or a bad idea is Dr. Michael Goldman. He's professor of sport management program at the University of San Francisco. Michael, I mean, Spurs in the Premier League, it's not really a premier team, however, in terms of performance. What do you make of SA Tourism's thinking around putting big bucks behind a team that's neither here nor there?
Potentially a brilliant business deal, Bruce. Good evening. I think you know, 300 million rand a year. Think about it as a media spend. So instead of putting that money onto CNN or Sky or Al Jazeera, SA Tourism potentially would be spending less than 30% of their 1.3 billion rand that the Treasury gives them to do this kind of thing around the world to attract tourists. They'd be spending less than 30% of that budget reallocating to a different media buy, a shirt buy, a sponsorship buy on its Spurs. And yes, you know, they may not be winning the cups that we want them to win if we are diehard Spurs supporters, but there are 20 million Spurs fans just in the UK alone. And that's a really appealing market, because if we just pick up a few of those, let's say 1%, right, of 20 million fans, that's 200,000 potential visitors to South Africa. That's half of the number of UK tourists currently coming to South Africa. You know, and at SATWA's numbers of about 10,000 rand that an average tourist spends, we're going to make that money up really, really quickly. And then, of course, not talk about the knock-on effect socially and economically.
Eyewitness
about people into jobs.
Sorry about Tola Kelly interrupting us once again there, Michael, but she's gone now. This idea of sponsoring a Premier League team, and the advantage, of course, of backing teams in the Premier League is this isn't local football. This isn't something that people huddle around their TV sets at home in Great Britain and Northern Ireland and watch the Premier League. The Premier League is a global platform. It is a global opportunity for exposure. Now, that strikes me as quite a compelling media spend, as you refer to it.
Absolutely. I mean, 20 million fans in the UK, many more around the world. And I think if you run the ROI numbers, that 1 to 6 that is in this famous PowerPoint, then you could pay for this potentially just off the UK visitors, which is what Rwanda did, right? Rwanda, as you mentioned, their consideration went from 29% to 50% within the first year, and they saw a 5% increase in UK tourists to Rwanda. If that was South African numbers, that would be an additional 20,000 people, 200 million rand. So yes, I mean, from a media buy, you're certainly getting access to this UK market. And of course, you know, sponsorships, as we know, is much more than a media buy. So that's going to be the first way we assess this, is from a media point of view. You know, is it equivalent in terms of ROI, in terms of eyeballs and potential visitors, to putting 300 million rand into, you know, CNN, Sky or Al Jazeera? But of course, much more importantly, sponsorship is about the activations that you can do, the access to players, the access to the stadium, the access to pre-season tours, all the ways in which we can make South Africa really relevant to people when they come out and watch Spurs play. And of course, that's not just at Spurs' home ground, but as you say, in the Premier League, you know, Spurs are playing all of those teams that maybe right now are playing much better, and if they happen to get into Europe, there's many more opportunities. So, but I think the global spin-off, which is tougher to calculate, but that could, you know, equal as many additional tourists. So, you know, nothing's guaranteed, as we know. Business decisions are always tricky beforehand. But, you know, if you run these numbers, you know, potentially they make a lot of sense. And the fact that, you know, it's only 30% of our annual budget for this kind of thing that we already have in the budget, you know, sounds like a good deal. The 1 billion rand headline, politically, given the chatter today, I think it's going to be really, really hard to approve.
And that's the trouble.
From a business point of view, it makes sense.
You understand from a marketing perspective, if you're marketing a product that isn't yet ready for market or a product that's not fit for sale, that you run the risk of getting lots of bad publicity. So you get lots of tourists coming to South Africa, and that's all well and good. But then they go home and they complain about no water, no electricity, our basic failures. And I think that's what's scaring a lot of South Africans is we're willing to spend money to draw people here, but we're not spending money on the experience of not only citizens, but the experience that the tourists will have when they come here. Because we're feeling very sorry for ourselves in terms of the way in which our country has been managed for the last while.
Absolutely. I mean, in SA Tourism's budget and the department's budget, there obviously is an investment almost equal to that billion rand on tourism product development and making sure that when tourists do come, they have a great time in the tourist facilities, which, of course, many of us in South Africa are not experiencing. You know, so what, we're not necessarily experiencing exactly the same thing that the tourists are getting. So, you know, there's a little bit of a difference there. But yeah, you know, when the lights aren't coming on and we have concerns about water and we have ongoing political corruption questions, you know, these big numbers become difficult to swallow. But, you know, at the end of the day, you need to spend money to make money. And are we going to wait to get the country fixed before we go and sell the product? or can we get some revenues to help us fix things?
Exactly. So a lot of people are saying, well, you know, you could just give the billion rand to Eskom, it would be better spent there. Well, a billion rand to Eskom right now, frankly, is not very much money. A billion rand to tourism promotion. What is SA Tourism's job? It exists to promote South Africa as a tourism destination. In your view, is this the best that they could do with the money at their disposal in order to achieve the goal of bringing more visitors to South Africa?
From an efficiency point of view, you mentioned the Arsenal numbers. This is, you know, half the Arsenal numbers at 300 million rand a year. You know, is this the best deal? I think, you know, it's one flight, not two. Europe makes a lot more sense than other markets. We have got these strong ties to Western Europe. So from a tourism point of view, it's an easier sell. And our friends in the UK are feeling perhaps a little bit bummed right now, being a bit disconnected from their friends in the continent. So there may be a smart opportunity here to leverage, you know, getting a bunch of English people to come and enjoy our summer. So I think those things line up quite well for this. I don't know if SA Tourism has considered other deals from a comparison point of view, and I'm sure that one of the analyses that would have been done purely from a media buy point of view is an efficiency ratio around the 300 million a year and what we get for in terms of eyeballs and the demographics of those eyeballs. How much money in the pocket? How old are they? What's their propensity to travel? What's the likelihood that we're able to increase that consideration and turn them into tourists? That's going to fund so many of our tourist businesses that employ so many of our people.
Thank you, Professor Michael Goldman. Michael Goldman is Professor of Sport Management at the University of San Francisco.
The Midday Report. Weekdays, 12 to 1.
We've just received a statement from the tourism minister, Lindiwe Sisulu, in which she refers to me as mischievous. But crucially, it does not deny that the deal is very much on the table. It calls it a memorandum of understanding and says it must still pass Treasury, but very much a confirmation that this deal is, in fact, pretty much happening.
Does she say whether or not she's a Tottenham Hotspur fan in the statement?
She says she is in consultation with her legal team against me, Mandy.
The mischievous Rebecca Davis.
The Midday Report.
With Mandy. Andy Wiener.
12 to 1 on 702.
702.
Companies that make sugary drinks are targeting us to make profits. Every sip we take dumps sugar into our bodies, making us sick and rotting our teeth. We need stronger laws to protect us now. Less sugar, more life. Show your support. What's up? 076-174-7999.
When I say business fiber, what comes to mind? Uncapped lightning fast connectivity? Well, now fiber has competition. MTN Business Uncapped Wireless. Get up to 100 megabits per second without digging or trenching. Only $4.99 per month for 10 megabits per second with a first 2 month subscription free. Now that's business done better. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za or an MTN store. T's and C's apply. What are we doing today? MTN.
702.
Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Well, South Africa is very, very good at many, many things. And somehow, and despite Transnet's very best efforts, South Africa does remain the world's second biggest exporter of citrus fruit. But as with all things, it's never easy, particularly in agriculture. When you're involved in exports, it adds layers of complexity. Now, new EU pest control laws run the risk of wreaking havoc for a different aspect of South Africa's citrus industry. Justin Chadwick is the chief executive at the Citrus Growers Association, on the line to us from Durban this evening. What is the EU looking to change here, Justin?
Yeah, good evening, Bruce. So last year, the EU brought in new regulations for false coddling moth, whereby we have to cold treat the fruit before it gets shipped and on shipment. It was an interim measure last year with the EU stating that they would be increasing it or make it more onerous in 2023. Unfortunately, you know, the stricter measures that are imposed in 2023 really are impossible to adhere to. And so we really are in dire straits in this year.
What is false coddling moth and why is the EU so scared of it?
Yeah, so false coddling moth is a small moth, and obviously what happens with a moth's life cycle is that it lays eggs and becomes larvae and fruit. So obviously it's not great if you're biting into an orange and you find yourself with a worm inside there. So obviously no country wants to get any new pests. The EU doesn't actually have false coddling moth in their orchards. It's actually sometimes called the African moth. It's only found in Africa. It's never actually moved beyond there. And hence, they are concerned about false coddling moth going with our fruit into their market. But we have a very strict and robust false coddling moth management system that actually ensures that that false coddling moth actually aren't in our fruit when the fruit is exported. Last year, we had only two interceptions, and we don't know whether those were actually live larvae or dead larvae, but two interceptions from over 350,000 tons of fruit. So we believe that we have it in hand, and there's no need for the EU to impose these strict measures.
In addition to the cost and the time and the delays that it causes, we've got a small problem, and that's load shedding. That makes your lives even more complicated. That's not the EU's problem, that's your problem, but this is just another problem upon problem upon problem with which you're having to contend. Are you likely to make a breakthrough with the EU, or are they digging in their heels? And if they do, what do we do with all of this glorious citrus fruit that we produce that we export into the European Union, which is an absolutely enormous market for us?
Yeah, so on the load shedding, obviously we have to cool the fruit down, and if you're having load shedding, that obviously is a big problem. Last year, towards the end of last year, I think it was in October last year, Minister Patel actually did confront the EU on this issue, and we're very grateful to DTIC for doing that. So they basically filed a WTO dispute where they believe, you know, they were challenging the EU's measure. And the first step in that dispute is consultation. So basically both parties get together and they look at the other's facts and they see if there's any compromise that they can come to. Now, that was in October last year. The new measures came into effect on the 1st of January this year, and basically the EU just kicked the can down the road and didn't come to the party, and obviously it got no interest in actually realizing that these measures are unnecessary and technically unjustified. So we now have to ask the minister to go to the next step in the WTO dispute, which is to call for a panel of experts to consider whether the measures are justified or not.
Thank you to Justin Chadwick, Chief Executive at the Citrus Growers Association. More concerns for an industry that's already had enough problems, frankly. This false coddling moth, have you ever heard of it? I've never heard of false coddling moth. You have now. It's Eyewitness News Time now at exactly 7 o'clock.